Many Americans have convinced themselves that we have the best medical care in the world. We have the best and most innovative drugs in the world. And the doctrine of American exceptionalism is not just common, it's adhered to by most Americans. The United States, they believe, is not just the greatest country that has ever existed. It may even have been divinely inspired. But one needs only to take a peek under the hood of that car to see deep systemic problems. How is it possible that in the wealthiest country in the world, medications are so expensive that some people, mostly the poor and the elderly, often have to ration them or they actually die because they can't afford the cost? How is it possible that the medical care is so expensive that thousands of people simply die rather than to go into debt to afford even basic medical care? How is it possible that in the wealthiest country in the world, 17 military veterans commit suicide every single day because mental health care is simply not available to them? I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. The big pharmaceutical companies are something of a boogeyman in the United States, and that's not by accident. Pharmaceutical development is driven by profit, not altruism. And if a new medication is not cost-effective, it just simply isn't developed. At the same time, the big pharmaceutical companies often increase their profits by giving doctors a commission on the drugs that they prescribe. And the U.S. is one of only two countries in the world where pharmaceutical companies are allowed to advertise their drugs on television. Many Americans see their commercials and go to their doctors asking for the latest, greatest medication to cure or prevent everything from depression to erectile dysfunction to HIV to leg cramps. The drugs are expensive, but many people don't care. They'll pay the money if it makes their lives anything like what's in the commercial. Carefree people running along the beach, riding horses, enjoying time with friends or family, and apparently being healthy. And they don't care about the side effects, which are whispered at the end of the commercial or which appear in very, very small print at the bottom of the screen. My favorite is for a new drug to treat anxiety. The commercial looks great until, that is, the voice at the end tells you that the side effects include rectal discharge, death, and an irresistible urge to gamble. Seriously. But again, it's all about the money. And it's not just pharmaceuticals. It's also medical devices. Listen to what our guest today recently wrote. Quote, imagine a TV ad for a hip replacement device. Over scenes of puppies and sunsets, a voiceover warns, hip replacements may cause tissue death, the destruction of muscles, bones and ligaments, nerve damage, mental changes, thyroid disorder, vision and hearing problems, and heart failure. Unquote. Such ads may soon be a part of primetime viewing, not just because the device industry is starting to advertise, but because medical device side effects are as scary as, if not worse than, drug side effects. Martha Rosenberg is a veteran journalist who writes frequently about the impact of the pharmaceutical, food, and gun industries on public health. Her work has appeared in the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Chicago Tribune, Salon, and a lot of other places. Martha, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, John. I'm so happy to be with you.
Martha, I have so many things to ask you that it's probably not even possible to do it in 30 minutes, but here goes. So let's start with Big Pharma and with the development of new drugs. You wrote an important article in Salon in which you said that these companies will issue a press release about some so-called unrecognized disease. They'll launch a TV campaign to, quote, raise awareness about it. They'll send people to their doctors for prescriptions and then develop a second drug to boost the first drug, either because the first drug doesn't work or because people don't have this so-called disease in the first place. So tell us about this vicious cycle and how the big pharmaceutical companies perpetuate it.
Well, sure, John. It's pretty apparent to anybody who watches TV that they've really captured TV advertising, especially news media, and they're what we call the ads are DTC, direct to consumer advertising. And what's very insidious, because my background is advertising, is what we call unbranded advertising. I don't know why the FDA permits it, but what that is they'll highlight a disease that you might have, they hope you have, because they want to make money, without telling you the drug they're trying to sell. Okay, and like examples might be exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. You might have it if you have indigestion, and they don't tell you we have a drug to sell you for this disease that we hope you have. So these awareness, they're called awareness campaigns or unbranded advertising. People think they're from the CDC or the FDA. No, they're from drug makers.
You have written what to me is a damning indictment that Americans have been led to believe that they suffer from, among other things, seasonal allergies, asthma, seasonal affective disorder, social anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, ADHD, erectile dysfunction, irritable bowel syndrome, dry eye. The list just goes on and on and on. We hear about things like restless legs and excessive daytime sleepiness. We get drugs for these things whether we need them or not. And yet Americans are among the unhealthiest and fattest people on the planet. How did we end up like this? And when did it happen?
Well, John, that's a great point you're making, because we have the money to be healthy. I mean, we have the systems, and we are very unhealthy. I think, I'm sure you know this, there's only two countries in the world that permit direct-to-consumer advertising, drug advertising, which is New Zealand and us. So a big reason we're unhealthy is the advertising. And if you watch TV, which I try not to, but in between the drug ads are food ads. So people are taking drugs that make them obese and unhealthy, and they're also eating these foods that make them unhealthy. And somebody was making a joke to me recently that Americans look terrible but smell good. So we're convinced that, you know, like you need mouthwash and you need dryer sheets. But you're overweight and unhealthy, you've got high blood pressure, you've got all these diseases that nobody had or even knew about until direct-to-consumer advertising. And John, the DTC advertising began in 1998, and it's so pernicious that they've actually got classes in medical school teaching would-be doctors how to refuse the patients that come in and they say, I have this disease and I need this drug. I know because I saw it on TV.
You go on in this article to talk about something that is systemic in the United States, and that is just wrong, wrong, wrong. You talk about how the big agribusiness companies produce foods that fatten and sicken people. They use taxpayer money and government subsidies to market these unhealthy foods. They dump these processed foods into the school systems, and then they lobby the government to help them keep that cycle going. How is that even possible? Is it unique to the United States? And why don't either Congress or the Food and Drug Administration, or maybe both, put a stop to it?
Well, you know, John, that's a very complicated question. I can't really answer about other countries, but I do know this. People don't realize USDA, Department of Agriculture, was never founded to protect the consumer, whereas FDA was. USDA was founded to support food growers, farmers, and that's what it does. Okay, so that's sort of one answer, is they don't care about the eater or the food consumer. But one example, a big culprit that we've seen in the last 20 years, or certainly the last 10 years, is what we call high fructose corn syrup, which all the soft drinks now contain. And I work with a lot of doctors, and some docs I work with wrote a paper where they connected the high fructose corn syrup, which is in everything, to adult ADHD symptoms. And specifically, you know, we hear about the gamers that all day long they're gaming and they're drinking Mountain Dew. Well, yeah. And evidently, these high fructose corn syrup foods produce a kind of famine response in people where they don't believe they've ever had enough to eat, even though they've eaten enough. So it really has a medical effect. One thing I wrote in my book, which I hope everybody would like to follow, called Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Lies, just recently published, and it's on Amazon, is Pink Slime. Now, Pink Slime was about 10, 12 years ago, a huge story because some of the news stations showed this awful ground beef coming out of grinders. It looked like intestines. And what the scandal was is that slaughterhouses or beef preparers were using ammonia puffs on this ground beef to kill the E. coli, which is endemic to the slaughterhouses and the animals. And they were using ammonia puffs to kill the E. coli, which otherwise would harm us. And so it was going to the school lunch program, which, of course, USDA very much provides school lunches and poor women who are on food stamps and aid to dependent children. And so there was a huge scandal where the company that was making this so-called pink slime lost a lot of customers, and parents were outraged that their kid might be eating this stuff. But what nobody realizes is that the USDA, or it could have been FDA, one of the government agencies, actually legitimized the pink slime.
Is the bottom line of the food problem processed foods? Is it bad habits? Is it food deserts? Or is it simply corporate profits? And is it even possible to turn this around?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, first of all, if you go into the grocery store, there are a lot of foods, which I certainly try to eat them, that are not processed. You don't have to eat processed or ultra-processed food, okay? You have to make an effort and read labels. I think it can be turned around. I think that the public and health-conscious people want pure food. I know when I see something and it says no artificial ingredients or no GMOs, certainly I want that. I think food desert is an issue because if you really live in an area where your food is going to come from a 7-Eleven, yeah, you're in trouble. But it is the reason we've got so much ultra-processed food and processed food is corporate greed, pure and simple. It's just cheaper. And one thing I write about in my books is the GMO crops. Like I live in Illinois, and when you leave Chicago, you just have fields after fields of corn. Well, we're not eating the corn. That's GMO corn, and the animals are eating it, the animals that people eat. So, they grow faster, and it's cheaper. So the bad food is driven by corporate profits, but it's also driven by, I've written about this, how foods were designed that way. They were designed to be addictive. And so, you know, it's like even pet foods. I don't have a dog anymore, but I can remember why does a dog love this pet food so much? Well, it's designed to be addictive. So there's a lot of, but mostly another big issue I always talk about is food advertising. Because when you see these, bacon cheese burger with an egg on top and it looks so good, and then here's your Coke. The advertising works. I was in advertising a long time, and it absolutely works. So there's all these factors. The advertising, the corporate profits, people being addicted to junk food, people watching too much TV is a factor. And then also some of these psych drugs we've talked about make people obese also. And they I don't know this for sure, but probably change their eating habits somewhat also. One thing we talked earlier, you and I, about invented diseases. Many people have heard of GERD, GERD, gastro reflux disease. And I'm not saying it doesn't exist. What I am saying, it's been amplified by drug makers to sell PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, or gas reducers. A lot of people who believe they have GERD because of TV ads actually have heartburn and they need to eat better. But there's been so much money in these PPIs, which have terrible side effects. They leach calcium out of the bones, and they cause C. diff, C. difficile, which is a very dangerous intestinal disease. So, but again, if we were eating well, we wouldn't be having heartburn or GERD.
You are absolutely right. Thank you, Martha. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with journalist Martha Rosenberg about big pharma and agribusiness in the United States and about the effects that these enormous industries have on our health. The situation is not good. Stay tuned.
Сложным.
Вот зараза взялись, как сегодня, ты лянь, пата.
Вспышка.
Копать гарь.
Нога оторвана.
Когда мозг сигнал посылает, а конечности нет, это тяжко, конечно.
Тихо, тихо, тихо.
Напоследок просто ударь его рукой, кулаком, просто собью.
Да, больно. Да, у тебя конечность валяется оторванная.
Аля, живой!
А тут одной ноги нету. Не смертельно.
Я уверен, что найду себя в этой жизни, найду применение.
Надо жить обязательно, в первую очередь надо жить.
Все красавчики.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Martha Rosenberg. She's a veteran journalist who writes frequently about the impact of the pharmaceutical, food, and gun industries on public health. Her work has appeared in the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Chicago Tribune, Salon, and elsewhere. Thanks again for being with us, Martha.
Thank you, John. I'm so happy to meet you and be on your show.
Well, the pleasure's all mine, believe me. Martha, I have a cousin with whom I'm very close. A few years ago, she developed a heart condition, and she required surgery to install a heart pump. She had that surgery, and she didn't get any better. A year later, the hospital informed her that the pump was defective and had been recalled. So she has to have surgery again to remove the bad pump and to have a new pump installed. She told me recently that she would rather be dead. You've done a lot of research on medical devices. Tell us what you've learned about these devices and about the industry behind them.
Well, thank you, John. I've written several books, and I really did not include the devices in my books because the device revelations are more recent. There's a wonderful book by Jeannie Lenzer. She's an editor at British Medical Journal, and she wrote a book that really exposed the device industry. All I really did was read it and interview it and do a little review it. But nonetheless, I would say the device industry, it gets less coverage from reporters than the drugs. And it's probably less ethical because what Jeannie said in her book is that they think that these devices have been scrutinized and tested by FDA or, you know, the medical people, and they often haven't been. In other words, the testing is not nearly as good as it is with medication, where it's also not good. Okay, so there's a false confidence people have with the devices. Devices are very lucrative to hospitals. I think we talked, and I think I might have sent this to you, that a new hip would be like thousands of dollars to the hospital and maybe to the doctor and the surgeon. And in point of fact, it costs maybe $300 to create. So there's a huge profit margin. The device, as I say, it's very underreported. There's a lot of risk. One company that's had a lot of bad press over devices is called Medtronic. And I think they're still out there selling their devices. But I also have to add, since I'm very much an anti-obesity advocate, and I have to also add that if people are not obese, they do not need new hips and new knees, and all that stuff is linked to the obesity epidemic that we're seeing. And we didn't, like our grandparents or even our parents, they didn't have new knees and new hips the way we are now. So the device, now I'm not saying with the heart, you know, heart, obviously you need a device, you need an implant. But I would say to anybody considering a device, get on the internet. A couple sites that I recommend are Public Citizen is a wonderful advocacy site for consumers. And also Ask a Patient is a site that has no advertising from industry. And you can see what people say about their health and the drugs they've taken, how old they are, how long they've been on a drug. I'm not sure if they cover devices, but I recommend them. And I also recommend the People's Pharmacy as another site. So I recommend to people that are considering devices, go on the internet and see what people are saying and whistleblowers are saying, not just industry who pays for those expensive ads.
You have noted that unlike drugs, which are dated, labeled, and tracked, it's impossible to know how many people have how many medical devices in their bodies. To tell you the truth, I have an artificial knee and a titanium plate in my right hand. Sometimes I set off airport metal detectors and sometimes I don't, but it's insane to me that there's no computerized record of implants or medical devices that exists anywhere. Why is that? Why has it never been done, and why is there no government oversight?
Well, you know, John, you're absolutely right. There is no database that I'm aware of, and there's not even really a patient movement for that, which there should be. And you mentioned it, you know, your own devices, and I apologize for that remark I made about obesity, because I'm sure that you had good reasons for your devices. But I think that people, they don't demand from the device industry what we might demand from the drug industry. I think people have too much trust. You know, we talked about the profits of in the medical field. There's great profits, and I can remember, you know, way back when I was young, when you didn't have insurance companies, okay? It was a concierge model in which people would pay the doctor directly. And once you got the insurance in there, the insurance middlemen and the hospitals and the profiteering motive, medicine just became deranged. It became, it was no longer for the health of the patient. And I think with devices, that there's a bad trust in well, you know, with drugs and with devices, there's a strong feeling that they wouldn't have been approved, they wouldn't be on the market if they weren't safe, and then the doctor wouldn't suggest them to me if they weren't safe. And both of those are just wrong. And how many deaths do we have to see?
Oh, you didn't offend me. Both of my injuries were from my CIA days, so no worries.
Yeah, I'm so interested in your story, John. I mean, my gosh, what you've been through.
It's been an odyssey. Well, you mentioned something a moment ago that I think is very important and deserves revisiting. And that's the outrage of pricing. You note that, for example, a hip implant costs about $350 to manufacture, but hospitals pay up to $7,500 to buy them from the manufacturer. In turn, the patient pays an average of $39,000 for that hip replacement. Why is there no regulation for these kinds of implant surgeries? And really, is it any wonder that so many Americans travel to foreign countries to have their operations?
Well, that's a wonderful point that you make there, John. We call it medical tourism, which is sort of a cavalier term because it's not like you're enjoying it, but yeah, other countries are way ahead of us. And I think that we, first of all, we lack patient awareness, and we lack a patient lobbies. A lot of the so-called patient groups are just pharma fronts, okay? The other thing that we have in the U.S. that you're not going to see in countries that you could flee to for a device insert is we have the lobbying. And I've read that for every Congress member, whether Senate or House, there's 5 lobbyists. There's so much money in that's dangled in front of our lawmakers are captured. They just are captured. I'm not going to mention his name, but I have a lawmaker who represents me, and I love him. However, he's very highly funded by pharma. I don't know what you do when you're a lawmaker, you know, to turn down the, you need the money to get reelected, but anyway, other countries do not have this very unethical lobbying system, which explains a lot of the things we're speaking about, where I can think of certain congressional hearings into these high prices. Occasionally, a little ray of light will come through. Like, I don't know if you remember the guy that we called Pharma Brother, and I think his name was Martin Screlly. Right. You remember that? Okay. And he had taken a drug that cost something like $300 and or maybe $150, and it just made it into 4 digits. And he was so errant in what he was doing. He was sent to prison for something else, but he was noticed. But when we see hearings in Congress about prices, which could go into the device issues, they don't go anywhere, because these our lawmakers are very indebted to pharma, and you know, that's how we got in the situation we're now in, where it's the hospital, they make a huge amount of the surgeons in hospitals. I'm very discouraged with the medical profession at this point.
Martha, your book is Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Nightmare. Tell us where we can get it here in the United States and around the world.
Oh, bless your heart, Sean. Okay, actually, it is a nightmare, but the actual title is a little bit different. It's called Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Lies. Okay, it is a nightmare, but it's called Big Lies. And it's really on Amazon for any country. Anybody who might be listening, it's a paperback. It's very inexpensive. I believe it's under $20. The book has, I think, 23 cartoons, because I'm also a cartoonist, not a good cartoonist. But I think that this stuff is so darn depressing that you need to leaven it up with a little humor. So there's a lot of cartoons in there. It's a funny book. It's a sad book. But anyway, Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Lies.
Well, thank you so much. The book is fantastic. I read it and I loved it. Communities and countries and ultimately the world are only as strong as the health of their citizens. Owen Arthur, the late Prime Minister of Barbados, once put it most simply. He said, quote, "He who has his health has hope, and he who has hope has everything." I'll ask that rhetorical question again. How can the wealthiest country in the world have the most expensive medical system in the world, a system that leaves the elderly, the needy, and the poor behind? I'd like to thank our guest, Martha Rosenberg, for being with us today. And thank you to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. Please check out Martha's book, Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Nightmare. I'm John Kiriakou. Please follow me on Substack @John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.